You know, it works so much better when you get the right buttons going. Well, the sound file will be a little screwed up. Good evening, everyone. too many things to do. There I was trying to get a cigar lit up because it's Ash Wednesday, and I forgot to put up one of the important buttons. I got a lot of important buttons here. See what happens when I get ahead of myself? It is prayer meeting Ash Wednesday, everybody. Mardi Gras is over. Lent begins. That season of misery. And it, of course, always begins with Ash Wednesday. I've got an El Paluto lit up here, honking on it for all I'm worth. I got to make me some ashes so I can draw stars and moons and curlicues and stuff on my head and be symbolically superstitious. I'll have it in a couple of minutes here. It's Ash Wednesday, right? And this being Ash Wednesday prayer meeting, well, let's get it started in rare form. Brother, minister of music, would you come on down here and lead us in our offertory hymn? And I've got to let you know, as the plate passes, brethren and sistren, as the plate passes, you should know that we are well on our way to making our second week fundraising contributory goal. We've only got about $400 to go until we can make it to the middle of March right on time. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. We'll call it the 16th of March. We've got about 6-7 days, and in that time we should be able to find 40 folks willing to kick in $10 apiece to, you know, into the little plate as it comes around, the little PayPal button in the bottom of the little brass plate. Or via snail mail. You know where the address is. It's over at headonradionetwork.com. And we will be on our way to maybe making 3 solid months worth of our actual fundraising goal. Something that will never have happened in the history of the Horn before. Isn't that exciting? I should think so. It's nice to be able to breathe a little easier about being able to pay the next month's bills. So as the plate passes, just consider that. Remember, I can't send out any prayer hankies. For those of you who don't have one, however, I will remind you that we do still have a few remaining those beautiful, beautiful prints for the love of West Virginia. You'll recall that they were handmade. They are handmade. They are signed. They are numbered prints. And they are available for you. I think there's just a small handful left if you want to jump in and get one. We made them available for, $75 contributions. That offer is still out there. Some of you have received them who wrote for them, or who didn't write for them, but gave in that degree. We've used it as a kind of a thank you as well. Just shoot me a note if you want that. Let me know. And we will be on our way to this evening's prayer meeting edition of the Horn. Brother Minister of Music, if you would come forward, please, brother, and lead us in the hymn. Amen and amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs. And soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
And dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you, wouldn't you? Oh, brethren and sistren, bring forth those refrigerated serpents and that watered down strychnine. Bring it forth, brethren and sistren, because it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Now, we've gotten the deacons in out of the street out there where they stand about smoking with the sinners, got them through the vestibule, got them down here in the front row where I can catch them when they start nodding off. And everybody's in the pews as they ought to be. But I want you to think, brethren and sistren, because this is the official prayer meeting Ash Wednesday version. We are going to make ashes of ourselves tonight. Hallelujah, glory. Yeah, I almost got enough ash on this cigar here to start drawing pictures on my own head with it. It's Ash Wednesday. Lent has begun. The season of Mardi Gras is over. Carnival is over. As the old joke says, coffee break's over. Back on your heads. Yes, indeed. It is that season of miserable self-abnegation that was imposed upon poor people everywhere by Mother Church while their betters sort of looked the other way and went on living their lives. You know, that whole self-abnegation and self-sacrifice and we've got a modern 21st century manifestation of it too, don't we? It's what Republicans do to ordinary folks. The banks get big handouts. The Bank of America doesn't pay any taxes. You know how it goes. Meanwhile, the Republicans in Congress pass bills to cancel programs that help people out of mortgage crises and things like that. Same stuff. Different day. They just put different names on it. Nothing changes. You know, and if you look around, you'll see that that's true in so much of life. You know, the other day I was turning onto my road here, this little road where this little house sits, this little falling down place that we lovingly refer to as the mansion. And we used to have this charming little sign that said, "Welcome to," and showed a little picture of a country road wending its way through rolling hills. And it was beautiful. It was just a nice thing. So the other day, I'm turning onto my road and I look over and go, "What the?" The charming little sign that said, "Welcome to," with the little painting of the country road wending its way through the rolling hills was gone. It's now been replaced by a painting of a brunette cross-dresser with his arms out that says, "The Second Coming of Jesus." Had somebody coming to visit we weren't coming to visit, it was UPS. And they called and said, "How do we find you?" I said, go to Jesus and turn right. Huh? Trust me, when you see it, you'll understand. Oh, it's annoying as hell. Because even if you buy into the poppycock, that brunette transvestite is not Jesus. And there's little cherubs and angels all a-hooting around. Did they bother to ask if there was anybody on this road that didn't subscribe to that silliness? No. I got to figure out what I got to do about that thing. Now, I suppose I could pray. Pray that maybe a little lightning had come down and just blow it out of the ground. I mean, it's just dumb. I mean, this is a road sign for my road, and it's a damn painting that's every bit of 5 feet tall by 4 feet wide. You know, if you live in the Atlanta area, you know what it is to be, if you're in Marietta, I'm sorry, Marietta,
Go to the big chicken and turn left. Go to the big chicken and turn right. Go to the big chicken and keep on going. It's a great big old failed Kentucky Fried Chicken sign from days gone by that just became a local landmark. Jesus, you can the pilots can navigate by it from the air, the big chicken in Mayretta. Well, now I guess I've got something similar. Go to the big Jesus and turn left. You know what I'm going to do? I will take a picture of it at some point and put it up on the website. Just so you... I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. What purpose, either practical or any other sort, is served by a painting, a big imaginary cartoon painting of Jeebus at the entrance to my road? I guess it's probably a safe bet that there aren't any Jews or Muslims on my road, but still. What about those of us who follow the Flying Spaghetti Monster? Is that what I have to do? Put up a sign, a 5 foot tall by 4 foot wide sign of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and says, and the Flying Spaghetti Monster welcomes you too? You know, it's just... Why? Why does it have to be there on top of us, day in and day out? Turn right at Jesus. And of course, I'm sure it's quite the right-wing Jesus anyway, because there's certainly nothing Middle Eastern about the guy. Making some real progress here. I should have enough ash here to start doing curlicues and doodles and stars and moons and whatnot all over my head here and get properly expiated. Will any old ash do, or does a pederast have to pray over it in order for it to be properly Ash Wednesday ash? You know what? I'll be happy with the fact that a working person labored over this cigar. That makes it sacred and sanctified enough for me. How about you? But it is prayer meeting Wednesday Ash Wednesday on the Horn. It apparently is a tradition, this Ash Wednesday business, where pederasts in dresses draw crosses on people's heads in filth. You know, ashes, you know, filth. Goes back to in the Old Testament, you find people who are particularly unhappy and feel like they've been put upon by the universe. They sit in sackcloth and ashes. I think our buddy Job sat in sackcloth and ashes at one point, or maybe his wife did. Lots of sackcloth. Apparently, there was a lot of ashes to go around back then because people were running up and down throughout the Levant, burning each other's cities to a crisp. Men, women, children, beasts of the field, selling things into slavery, that kind of, you know, raping, doing genital mutilation of all the males in a town and then sneaking in while they were getting over their Johnsons being cut on and murdering them in their sleep and then going, oh, I didn't do it. No, I'm not that guy. That's not even my name anymore. Yeah. And we're supposed to remember... by getting filth put on our heads, that from dust we came and to dust we return. Can't I just do that sweep in the house? Oh, and by the way, little note to ministers out there, they are not supposed to mix any water with the ash, because that then causes the ash to become caustic and can create chemical burns in the shape of a cross on a person's forehead. Of course, if you're happy to wear it on your forehead all day on Ash Wednesday, why not just get it burned into your skin? That's what I always say. You know, Charles Manson carved a little swastika into his head. Maybe the Christians would be better off with a little cross burned into their foreheads. Who knows? And apparently cigar ashes will not do. It's supposed to be the ash of the palms from the palm crosses of the previous year's Palm Sunday. This is just getting far too complicated. But it's also defined, I am told, as a movable fast. Somehow I prefer Hemingway's movable feast. Fasting, you know, if you've got to before some blood work, sure. If you're doing it to get rid of some unwanted excess weight, well, I reckon. If maybe you're doing a hunger fast to protest some sort of ungodly act of institutional cruelty or political cruelty, absolutely, it's an act of conscience. But fasting for something that's invisible, that may not actually even be there, yeah, not so much. Not me. No. So this is a funny little day for funny little superstitions, and why's he got the letter T on his head? Of course, Baptists don't really do Ash Wednesday. That just smacks a little too much potpourri for them. No, not potpourri, not the smelly stuff. Potpourri. Yeah. Oh, hey, Lottie. There's a good idea. Yeah, targets. How about instead of little letter T, how about just a circle with a little bullseye? Ash Wednesday. Well, do you feel particularly? You know what? Do you feel particularly sinful? Because I don't. And I don't need any particular, what kind of not connected to the world person are you if you have to if the only day of the year you're reminded of the fact that you're mortal, is the day that you wake up with a raging hangover from the night before when you were either showing or screaming, show me your at a massive party involving cheap plastic beads. Really? That's the only time of year when we can... Maybe that's the thing. You get up with just a bone-crushing hangover after Mardi Gras, and you go down to the church, and you go, I feel like death. And the priest has his thing, and he goes, die on your head, and go, yeah, okay, and you're reminded. Maybe this has meaning for folks. Maybe the idea of some sort of symbolic... reminder of one's, but you know what? I kind of think about it all the time. Maybe that makes me weird. Maybe I needed one of those little pills that remember the animated egg that was so sad on the cartoon TV commercials? Maybe I need, and he took a pill and then he was a little smiling egg just rolling around on the ground. Maybe I need a pill. Because this doesn't, I don't need to be reminded that I don't get to stay here forever. I mean, for that matter, if I really want to get reminded, I've got Jimmy Buffett. Here's a great line. What is it from Cowboy in the Jungle? Maybe. After all, it's only 24 hours, maybe 60 good years. It's really not that long a stay. Or maybe I can go and read Ozymandias. I think that was by Shelley. And that'll remind. Hey, how about a picture of the Roman Forum? How about a picture of a Mayan jungle, a Mayan temple in the jungle? We're reminded every day. Look at the. How about pictures of slaughter in the streets of some country where revolution is where some dictator's trying to hang on to power? Lately, that would be Libya. Are these insufficient to remind us of our mortality? That we have to get the dirt put on our heads? By some guy who's never worked for a living? Oh! There's a thought, News Ninja Susan. Bob, you mean you can use ash from the confetti at carnival? I don't think they're going to let us. And by the way, you women in the audience, if you're following Mother Church, just remember, you don't get to put ash on anybody else because you're women folk, and you're not qualified to commune with the divine. Even though if there is any residence of the divine anywhere in humanity, it's probably in the females of the species, just saying. Yep, feel lousy. And then how long, what's Lent? 40 days, 60 days? It's too complicated. It's just too complicated. too much stuff to remember. But it is Ash Wednesday. And I suppose I haven't seen anybody. We don't have a lot of Roman Catholics around here, so I haven't seen anybody walking around with filth on their heads. You know what? Cigar ash is kind of hot. Ow! No, I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. Lightning bolts? Nah. It's Ash Wednesday. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. You can certainly put your hands on the subwoofer and just relax. Here in the Cathedral of Common Sense, I, Arch Pope, Chief Rabbi, Superior Imam, Exalted Shaman, Magnificent Elder Bob Kincaid, will not attempt to put any dirty things on your head. We're just that nice a cathedral. So stick around. I think we're going to have some interesting conversation this evening. It's about 24 minutes past the hour. And we'll get going with the conversation here presently. I just feel like a little musical interlude. Thought we might invite some folks down out of the choir to lead us in some inspirational singing. You're listening to The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice. Swing, classic Van Halen on this Ash prayer meeting Ash Wednesday. You just got to have some good sacred music if you're going to have a good sacred ceremony. I swear, I think there's something wrong with the mixer here. Check. Yeah, this is weird. Oh, well, we'll get through one way or the other. Let's see, Jack in Shreveport writing in with a suggestion for Lent. Hey, Bob. Maybe those in the Federalist Society, and especially those in Opus Dei, could give up their Bush tax cuts for Lent. What do you think? Yeah, see, that's a lovely idea. Unfortunately, they ain't going to do it because the well-to-do never pay much attention to the falderall and mumbo-jumbo of the religion industry. Doesn't matter to them because they know it's a con more than anybody else on earth. That's why they're grubbing and grabbing and groping and grasping and getting everything their hands can lay upon to hoard it up in this life because, you know, can't take it with you. Jim pointing out. Check. There we go. Is this? Oh, this is getting annoying. I hate engineering on the fly. Anyway, Jim pointing out that the Episcopals also do this, do the ash on the head thing. And he says, to us, this is meaningful and need not be denigrated. You know, I'm not denigrating. I just think it's silly, stupid, and foolish. If Christian religions went into other parts of the world and saw other people's rituals and said, well, stop that heathen foolishness. I just happen to think that as soon as the whole world stops all the foolishness, we will get on a whole lot better. I just would never let some guy who's never worked for a living put filth on my head. What kind of abnormal psych has to be involved with it? Here, sir, would you please pour some dirt on my head? No, I feel much better now. Hey. Ash Wednesday, Schmash Wednesday. I guess what, in a couple of weeks, everybody will be walking around with a piece of tropical the flora in their hands. Well, everybody but the Baptists and the Church of Christ and the weirdos. So do we have these technical things under control yet? Good, I hope so. By the way, some religious celebrating to do out there. You know, I try not to talk about her very much. But by golly, when it's a big event like this, you just have to. Liberty University, you know, Jerry Falwell U, proudly announced today that they're going to feature an extraordinary women conference next October. Now, unless I missed my guess, yesterday was the International Day of the Woman, but, you know, hey, it's the religion industry. They're not real good with calendars. They can't even pick a date when they want to rub dirt on people's heads. And so they're going to have their Extraordinary Women Conference in October there at Liberty University, where can you just imagine what the biology curriculum must be like at Liberty University? Yeah, me neither. They want to draw, and this is a quote, this is their pitch, they want to draw women closer to the heart of God and his extraordinary plan for their daily lives. Of course, being Liberty University, God's extraordinary plan for their daily lives does not include having control over their bodies in their daily lives. It doesn't include include contraception. It doesn't include making decisions about, no. It certainly doesn't include their daily lesbian lives. No. Most of the time, it doesn't include divorcing their abusive husbands in their daily lives. Nope. And it requires them to be submissive to their husbands in their daily lives, and that's God's plan, including that wig he makes her wear. Yeah. Liberty University Chancellor Jerry Falwell Jr. has written an email to the News and Advocate of Lynchburg, that as part of their celebration of drawing women closer to the heart of God and his extraordinary plan for their daily lives, they're going to feature, yes, in an event broadcast live to more than 1,000 churches. Why not just put it on Ustream and make it live to anybody that wants to see it? Oh, wait, there's no money in that. they're gonna bring in, glory to God, they're gonna bring in Governor Palin. Well, almost, not quite, half governor, half term governor, quitting Governor Palin. Jerry Falwell Jr. said Governor Palin is greatly admired by our Liberty University faculty, staff, and students for her patriotism and her determination to stand up for what is right despite vicious and unrelenting attacks against her and her family. Really? Does the biology department? Wait a minute, they don't have one of those. Okay. Does the astronomy department? Wait, they probably don't have one of those either. Does the grammar department, English department? No. Just which faculty admires Sarah Palin for her determination to stand up for what's right? Was she standing up for what was right when she was putting, crosshairs on Gabby Giffords? Is that part of the biblical worldview of Liberty University? Yeah, I didn't think so either. But nonetheless, there will be money charged for 1,000 churches to be able to watch this. And, of course, they have to do that so that they can raise the money to pay her to come and do it. Welcome to the religious version of This Way to the Egress. I wonder if the college Democrats at Liberty University greatly admire Mussolini. Oh, wait. There aren't any college Democrats at Liberty University. They were outlawed. Liberty University outlawed the college Democrats there a couple of years back. Liberty University said it was unable to lend support to a club whose parent organization stands against the moral principles held by the university. The note that I'm reading does point out the fact that even though she is greatly admired there, she will have to dress carefully. I'm guessing she won't be able to wear those dominatrix boots she likes to wear from time to time. Liberty University, even extraordinary women can't have a hemline above the knee. And Lord knows she's shown some knee out there. If I were her, I'd go full Pentecostal with a dress that came down to the floor, granny boots, a ruffled collar that comes up to under her chin, and go and find some beautician there in Lynchburg, Virginia, and have her hair Pentecostal done up to Jesus. What a treat for an Ash Wednesday. What a treat to find out, oh, Jesus. By the way, let's see, let me get rid of all the Ash Wednesday stuff. Yeah, don't need that either. There is some breaking news out there. I was just reminded of it. Not necessarily religious, but it is at least reassuring. It's reassuring with a side of, well, of course, duh. There's been an arrest. There has finally been an arrest in relation to the backpack bomb plot in Spokane, Washington. Remember back on Martin Luther King's birthday holiday, a backpack bomb was found undetonated in Spokane, set to go off around men, women, children, peacefully observing the MLK Day holiday? Yeah. Now, this won't get any coverage in the for-profit media, simply because, well, they're too busy with Charlie Sheen and too busy with the latest kerfuffle occasioned by the sleazy skullduggery of James O'Keefe The for-profit media busily taking James O'Keefe's word as gospel, even though the guy's been busted two or three. Well, he's been literally, you know, he was arrested in New Orleans trying to run a scam in what? Senator Mary Landrieu's office, posing as a telephone company worker. The Acorn thing was completely deconstructed by people like Brad Friedman and Matt Osborne. The Shirley Sherrod thing was proven to be a complete fraud. But that's okay. The New York Times is on it like white on rice and taking every word that James O'Keefe has put out there in his sleazy little attack on NPR as gospel. So don't expect a lot of coverage of this breaking important news. Our good buddy Dave Nyward over at Crooks and Liars is, of course, a resident of the Great Northwest. And Dave is the one who posted this story at Crooks and Liars. It is important. The FBI SWAT team, an FBI SWAT team, has executed a search warrant. They've made an arrest as of this morning in a little town in northeast Washington near the Canadian border called Addy, A-D-D-Y. I don't know how I could possibly be mispronouncing that, but it's entirely possible I am. Addy, Washington. It has been investigated as specifically a case of domestic terrorism. Not that you'll hear that on the for-profit news. The arrestee, here's the good part, the arrestee is Kevin William Harpham, H-A-R-P-H-A-M. He is 36. He is of Colville, 36 years old, from Colville, Washington. He has been charged with attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction. He has been charged with possession of an unregistered explosive device. He was scheduled to make an initial appearance in federal court this afternoon, which theoretically is still going on out in the Pacific time zone, as I'm frequently reminded. Who is Kevin William Harpham? He's a veteran. He is a former soldier. He has ties that connect him to the white supremacist movement. At least in 2004, was a member of an organization identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group called the National Alliance. Dave Nyward noting that the National Alliance is one of the most visible white supremacist organizations in the United States. What's the National Alliance? The National Alliance was founded by the late William Pierce, of West Virginia, by the way. Not that I'm proud of that. William Pierce was the author of The Turner Diaries, a book about a coming race war in America. No, really. The Turner Diaries were, among other things, a sort of broad-brushed inspiration for the Murrah Federal Building attack in 1995 in Oklahoma City. And in point of fact, these people have nothing in common with liberals, nothing in common with Democrats, nothing in common with progressives, but they have tons in common with teabaggers, the militia movement, the patriot movement, the Republican Party, conservatives. They are, in fact, another manifestation, another symptom of the ongoing GOP murder problem. We don't know yet why it is that the bomb didn't go off. If you buy into some sort of supreme deity, you can thank it, him or her. If you rather look at the universe and think that apparently just what it wasn't in the universal cards, do that. but it didn't go off, and men, women, and children were not slaughtered on the streets of Spokane on MLK Day. And I'm awfully glad of it. This one got caught. But bear in mind, for everyone that does, there are probably a dozen or more that haven't been yet, who are sitting around their little claverns and clubhouses, pissing and moaning about that one in the White House, when that one isn't even doing anything to them. Agnes and I had this conversation earlier in the day. She was watching C-SPAN and watching the fulminations of right-wingers trying to take down, and they passed the bill in the House, trying to take down a program that simply helped people who were part of the trapped in the mortgage crisis. And Agnes was furious. And then she pointed out an email that she had received from a person that she, well, never mind who the person is, but there it was again, the same email that keeps making the rounds and the rounds and the rounds and the rounds like a record with a scratch in it, and it just skips, skip, 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 skip. The Kenyan birth certificate email. Bless her heart, Agnes looked at me and said, "What are they so upset about?" And I said, "Honey, they're upset about the fact that there is a black man in the White House." And she said, "It can't be as simple as that." And I said, "Yes, it can be, because they are simple people. Just because one is simply evil does not mean one is not simple." And this is another manifestation of that.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yeah, morons. But dangerous morons. Again, to be a moron does not mean that you're not dangerous. And the Kevin William Harpums of the world, alleged to have been the propagator of this bomb plot that could have unleashed hell on earth in Spokane, Washington, is a moron. He's a violent, hate-filled moron. And there's lots of them. Going to the news report, from the spokesman review of Spokane, Harpum was in the Army in 1996 and 1997. He served with the 37th Field Artillery Regiment at Fort Lewis, Washington. He's a member of the Vanguard News Network. That's a racist website featuring essays and blog posts and message boards, things like resettlement and construction of local communities for whites and how to live white. I guess that means that every piece of music, after the minuet goes out the window. How to live white. Jesus, it sounds like an Eddie Murphy skit on Saturday Night Live. He is, according to the spokesman register, a registered voter. Okay, Washington residents, time to get busy. How, can you find out in Washington? I don't know. How is Harpum registered? He ain't a registered Democrat. I'll bet money on that. He's either a registered Republican or he's a registered independent. Harpum had a lot of dogs around his trailer. His house was surrounded by agents earlier today. Reverend Happy Watkins. Reverend Happy Watkins was interviewed for the story. He's senior pastor at New Hope Baptist Church in Spokane. He was a featured speaker of the Unity March in January on MLK Day. He said, "We've been asking questions, but no one's talked to us. People in New York City hear about Spokane and associate us with Hayden Lake and the Aryan Nations. It just shouldn't be that way because it's a great place to live. We've still got that hate that lingers and doesn't go away." That hate that lingers and doesn't go away. Because Spokane does have a racist and a white supremacist and a repiglican and a right-wing problem. Among other things, one of the most recent investigations and threats came in 1996. Three bombs linked to racists caused severe damage to a Planned Parenthood building, to the Spokane City Hall and the Spokane Valley office of the Spokesman Review newspaper. By the way, the bomb was placed in such a way as to maximize the blast toward marchers in the street. The maker of the bomb used, among other things, rat poison, intending to make sure that victims of the blast continued to bleed freely once they had been struck with the shrapnel from the bomb. I don't know about you. I suspect you feel similarly. But that story gives me chills. They caught them. But how many have they not caught? Clearly, they didn't catch the ones, at least before the fact, who blew up Planned Parenthood, the Spokane City Hall, and the newspaper office. And there will be more of this. There will be more of this for as long as these monstrous thugs don't get their way. Which means that until they are rooted out to the last man and woman, tried and legally convicted and put away for a long, long time, every last one of them, peace will be mighty hard to come by in this country. Because the threat of a Jared Loughner or a Harpum or any of the other growing legion of right-wing killers in this country will be always in the backs of our minds. And sometimes, at the side of our parades and our marches. Chilling, isn't it? And the thing is, do these things happen because someone acts alone? Of course they don't. They are influenced. They are influenced up and down and around and around. How to live white. Planned communities for white survival. There really is a vast right-wing conspiracy. Hillary Clinton was derided and hooted at when she made that statement oh so many years ago. But she wasn't kidding, and she wasn't wrong. There is a vast right-wing conspiracy in this country, and it is a conspiracy against you and me and us and all decent people, no matter the tone of their skin color, who would like to live in peace. I don't buy into the supernatural theory of devils, but I am absolutely certain that the flesh and blood variety devils walk among us every day, and they aim to kill, and they aim to do what devils do, which is to sow agony and misery wherever they may. And it just sort of makes you wonder where the country's going, doesn't it? And what we can do to protect against it. Live in peace, I suppose. Live in peace with your eyes wide open. Because remember, the police didn't stop this bombing. It was discovered by a citizen and reported, at which point the police diverted the entire route of the march until they could find out what it was. Addie has long been a hotbed of extremist and Christian identity activity. Christian identity. You know, it's interesting that Peter King, who is having his investigation of all Muslims hearings in the Congress beginning, what, tomorrow? It is interesting that he has no plans to investigate domestic Christian terrorists. A spokesman for his office said, well, he will if he becomes aware of any. Well, Congressman King, here you go. But Congressman King also says that the entire Muslim community is tasked with constantly proving that they are not seditious, terroristic killers. Men, women, children, doctors, lawyers, accountants, workaday Americans. Where is his demand that the vast body of Christianity disavow Christian identity participants and members of the National Alliance like Kevin Harpham? Because you can't talk about the Christian identity movement, you can't talk about the National Alliance, you can't talk about Aryan nations, you can't talk about these skinhead freaks without reference to the fact that they ground everything that they hold to be true in terms of Christian imagery, doctrine, and dogma. In the Christian Identity Movement, in the National Alliance, in all of these hate groups, God Almighty is as white as ivory soap. and created the white man to rule over all of what they refer to as the mud people. And Jesus was as white as Castile soap as well. And they use the book of Genesis and the story of the sons of Noah as, and that's where God created the Negras. No, really. I grew up hearing this stuff. Where, then, is the Christian community and its full-throated denunciation? Where is the Southern Baptist Convention and its unequivocal denunciation of these monstrous bastards who act in the name of the Prince of Peace? Where are they? Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Because they are part of the protected majority in this country, and therefore they don't need to do that. Only a hunted minority, like practitioners of the Islamic faith, must do that. And bear in mind, I'm no Muslim, I'm no Christian, I'm no Buddhist, I'm no anything. One of these is as silly to me as the next. But that's to me. That's to me. Facing Mecca to pray is as dumb as having to wear a hat or believing that crackers turn into meat. It's all dumb. It's all foolishness. But again, that is to me. And I want for people to be able to worship as they see fit. If they need an invisible friend to get them through the day, you know what? That's okay. Some people need 3 martinis. Other people need a doobie. Some people need Xanax. Other people need religion. Because Ash Wednesday or no Ash Wednesday, I suspect that we are far more cognizant of our own mortality than any of us would care to admit. And we don't need a little bit of filth rubbed into our heads once a year to remind us of that. It is with us every day. It's with us in the process of growing old and joints that aren't limber and loose like they used to be. Not those kind of loose joints, freaks. It's with us in a cough or a wheeze. It's with us in the fearful examination of a breast or a testicle. That there is, in fact, a checkout time. We know it all too well. And sometimes it makes it hard to get through life. Sometimes it's overwhelming. And sometimes we just deliberately look away. But we know all too well. And the question becomes merely one of, hey, how do we just make it a little bit better? A little more tolerable? Those 24 hours, maybe 60 good years. How do we underscore the good in that. Ron in Raleigh writing in, he says, Bob, I've been around a long time. I grew up in the Jim Crow South. I don't dislike white people. But what I have to say, there's something deeply wrong with a portion of the white population. A group of them actually believe they have been victimized by someone or something in this country. Once again, I say I pity the poor white man in his victimhood. But white folks have to create that sense of victimhood as a sort of armor against the victimhood that they have forced on literally the rest of the planet. Otherwise, it's existentially intolerable. And Ron also notes, you know, this is just one more thing that the right wing will not own. These freaks shooting and blowing up folks aren't them in their minds. They've been doing this shit since I was a kid, and they're not going to stop. And one of the main reasons they're not going to stop, Ron, is because we don't do a very good job of calling them out. You know, we tried to point out some of the more right-wingy things about Jared Lee Loeffner, or about the guy who flew his plane into the IRS building, or about any number of other wild-eyed, screeching gunmen who've fanned out across this country in the last few years. And the for-profit media says, no, no. They say, no, for-profit media, no, no, it can't be it. It's got to be something else. They're just crazy. That's what it is. They're just crazy. It's not that simple. And yet, in a way, it's even simpler. They're right-wingers. Right-wingers kill. Because it's the only thing that the right-wing lizard brain can conceive of as a solution. What was that phrase we dredged up last night? When all your problems look like nails, all your solutions will look like hammers. Or, you know, when all you've got is hammers, all your problems will look like nails. That's the right-wing bloodlust in a nutshell. And they're right-wing because they're white, and they're white because they're right-wing. And they're living in a world that terrifies them. Least of all, least of anyone, they probably don't need Ash Wednesday. Because every day they live in mortal fear, bowel-watering terror of the day when their whiteness will no longer open doors. So it's 6 minutes past the hour. It's time we took a little break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn, and we'll take your calls coming up next. I'm Bob.
Nothing can stop, nothing can stop, nothing can stop the sins of Memphis. Sally used to play with her hula hoops. Now she tells her problems to therapy groups. Grandpa's on the front lawn staring at a rake, wondering if his marriage was a terrible mistake. I'm sitting on the front steps drinking Orange Crush, wondering if it's possible for me to still blush. Oh yeah. A boy on a bike with corduroy slacks sleeps in the river by the railroad tracks, waits for the whistle on the train to scream so he could close his eyes and begin to dream. Oh yeah.
just goes. Nothing can stop, nothing can stop, nothing can stop the sins of Memphis. The hands on his watch spin slowly around, with his mind on a bus that goes all over town. Looking at the babies in the factories, listening to the music of Mr. Squeeze. As if by magic or remote control, he finds a piece of a puzzle that he missed in his soul. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. From the bells of St. Mary to the Count of Monte Cristo, nothing can stop. Nothing can stop, nothing can stop the sins of Memphis. Had a man, Eve, and Lucy, and Ricky, bit the big apple and got a little sticky. Esmeralda and the Hunchback of Notre Dame, they humped each other like they had no shame. They paused as they posed for a Polaroid photo. She whispered in his ear, exactly Odo. Quasimodo. From the bells of St. Mary to the Count of Monte Cristo, nothing can stop, nothing can stop, nothing can stop the sin. Sally used to play with her hula hoops. Now she tells her problems to therapy groups. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Hey guys, I know I don't say this enough, but I'm going to say it now. When push comes to shove, you guys are always there for me. And you really hung in there. And, you've always been so close to me. So, don't take this the wrong way, but I got you something. I love you guys.
Aw, we love you too.
I love you guys. Powder for your nads by Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
A little of this and a little of that, and then we go on to the phone. I'm a firm believer in data and actual evidence and, you know, factual proof and not taking things on faith. Faith is some mighty weak stuff to be leaning on in matters of life and death. I queried whether why it is that Peter King, Muslim hunter, isn't making inquiry into all the white folks, white right wing folks, who want to unleash hell, damnation, death, agony, and misery on this country. Well, there it is. Since September the 11th, 2001, there have been almost twice as many plots by non-Muslim terrorists as any by so-called Muslim terrorists. 36 plots by right-wing extremists since September 11th. As mentioned, they include Joseph Stack's suicide attack on the Texas IRS building. That includes Joshua Cartwright, who was enraged by the election of Barack Obama and said that the U.S. government was conspiring against him. That's your anti-government, anti-tax killers. Then there's the KKK, neo-Nazi, white supremacist bunch. There's been 27 plots by those, including a 2004 letter bombing of the Arizona Office of Diversity and Dialogue. That injured three people. There have been five attacks in the unknown miscellaneous category. Then there's the Christian extremists and the anti-abortionists. Three attacks by those, George Tiller being one of them. Oh, and look, there were two plots by black supremacist cults. Jewish extremists, two plots by them. Look at the religion industry on parade. People who hate immigrants, two plots by them. People who hate Jews. There was one plot by an anti-Semitic extremist. And, of course, there was a single plot by an anarchist, Joseph D. Konopka. He was a firebug. He disrupted radio and television broadcasts. He disabled an air traffic control system. He sold counterfeit software and damaged the computer system of an internet service provider. But Peter King, of course, wants to investigate the Muslims. Yeah, and that list, of course, has to be topped off lately by Mr. Harpum in Washington State. A couple other, let's quit fooling around. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is great news, that story about MLK Mama, because I just got in the mail. It just told me that what's waiting for me on the airfield, the HORJ, the head-on rendition jet.
Oh, goody. Is it warmed up and ready to go?
Yeah, it's warmed up and ready to go, and I'm going to bring this guy right to Peter King, right for the hearing, so they can put him right in the front row and show an example of what a radical terrorist.
Well, hopefully they'll waterboard him in front of the Congress. You know, Republicans love that waterboarding, David.
I think there's a good chance that's going to happen, because we know how much of a fair person this Peter King is, because he's all about the counting. He's all about counting Muslims, and he's all about counting white nationalists, too. He'll throw them in.
Oh, absolutely. Does that include the IRA, because he was an IRA supporter?
Yeah, that includes the IRA too.
And by the way, it's not the Horge, it's the Herge. It's the Horn Extraordinary Rendition Jet.
Oh,
yeah.
And I just can't wait to get. I got to round up some gas money for it. You know how that is.
Well, you know, you can just go down to the gas station. Jet fuel's kerosene. Kerosene's jet fuel.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking of
just empty. Spring's coming. Just empty out the space heater.
Well, this is a patriotic moment, so I'm sure people won't mind if I have to siphon some gas from somewhere.
I think they'll overlook it in the name of patriotism,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I'm glad there was an arrest.
Yeah, I'm glad about that. I think that I do think the fact that, here's the other thing. When I looked at the headline, it doesn't say anywhere former Aryan nationalist or anything. When people make these headlines, and especially on liberal sites, they should start doing that.
Yeah, well, that's part of what I said a few minutes ago, David, about the fact that we don't push back at very adequately. You know, we don't message this very well. You know, another white right winger trying to kill people.
And you know what would happen if this guy was a we don't even have to say what would happen if this guy was a Muslim What would happen if this guy was?
Well, look at the foo-frah over James O'Keefe's latest BS video. It's yeah. The New York Times was covering. The New York Times got burnt to a frazzle over the Acorn video, and still to this day won't admit it. Just got used and abused by Andrew Breitbart and James O'Keefe, and won't admit it. But everybody who knows the story knows what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there they are out there, just right out of the blocks and running like 40. To help advance Breitbart and O'Keefe's little story again. Is it because they can't learn or won't learn?
Well, it's interesting how what's happening right now with the NPR thing and the fact that everyone is latching on to the story only to show more of, oh my goodness, NPR is so liberally biased. He was talking outside to this man and he thought all teabaggers were racists. Cut their funding immediately.
Yeah, for saying that teabaggers are racists. When in fact, teabaggers are... Oh, wait a minute.
Racist.
Yeah. But, and of course, remember, O'Keefe used the Muslim boogeyman on that story, but nobody's talking about that angle. Nobody's talking about the inherent bigotry involved in that story, that he used a Muslim boogeyman. I saw Eric Cantor talking about it earlier, didn't I? Well, that's all right. That's all right. NPR's liberal. That's fine. Let them be liberal. But we just don't need to pay them. The taxpayer, hard-working, marking taxpayers, don't need to pay them to be liberal no more. And so another person resigned today. So that's two high-ranking NPR people who have fallen on their swords over the fact that James O'Keefe used a Muslim boogeyman to make him look silly.
You can't apologize. You got to resign. That's the Democrat and the liberal way. You got to resign. Republicans, you don't have to apologize. Resign.
Kind of. Is that bothersome to you? But the larger point is that, and there we just did it, David.
Yeah.
I get New York Times breaking news alerts, okay, in my email.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the Yankees win a baseball game, I get a New York Times breaking news alert. When this guy resigned from NPR and the woman resigned from NPR, whatever, I got a New York Times breaking news alert. I'm sitting here looking at all my hundreds and hundreds of emails. I haven't gotten a New York Times breaking news alert about another right-winger, another homicidal, murderous, teabagging, the Christian identity, follower of Jesus, right-winger, wanting to blow people up. I haven't gotten a New York Times news alert on that yet.
I have to tell you, what I got for a news alert, this was urgent, Bob. I got a news alert on Yahoo, and they were asking a very interesting question. They said, could Shaquille O'Neal have saved the notorious B.I.G.? And I thought, you know what? This is...
No, you stop it. That did not... No.
Yes. I was looking at the headline, and I was looking at Shaq's face with his lips all open. He's like, oh. This is so retarded.
I got a New York Times breaking news alert about Spider-Man.
Yeah. But the thing is, to put that on the front page, the front thing where you log into Yahoo, this is going to be the most important thing that people care about right here. But that's the problem. Our priorities have been completely shuffled by corporate media to an astounding rate that we can't even begin to fathom it, people. You know, when Bill Maher was doing the new episode for Real Time with Bill Maher, he had to stop himself because he said Obamacare. And he said no.
Yep, got sucked right into the frame, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was making that reference of how fast these memes hit us and we don't even know it.
Well, have you seen this latest little piece of evidence about how the right wing does manipulate the dialogue and the discussion? Wikipedia has banned a PR firm employee for the Koch brothers for the use of unethical sock puppets in airbrushing Wikipedia entries about the Koch brothers.
Hmm.
The Koch brothers and Koch Industries use new media strategies, an internet PR firm, and they do what's called word of mouth marketing for Coca-Cola, Burger King, AT&T, Dodge, Ford, and Koch Industries.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going in and polishing up the bios on Wikipedia of Charles Koch and David Koch, political activities of the Koch family, and the science of success. That's Charles Koch's little own personal version of, like, Dianetics or something.
Mm.
And it turns out that this company, this NMS, specializes in this garbage. Among other things, NMS maintains the Koch Industries Twitter page, Facebook page. They have an active team working on promoting Koch Industries in the comment section of blogs and news websites, David. This is one of those hey, pay attention moments.
Yeah.
Every time you see some determined right-winger on an otherwise normal liberal blog posting, and I had an example of that earlier today. I saw an example of it earlier today. Little lights should go off. Little bells and whistles should start tooting and ringing and whatever, because what you're looking at is a concerted, bought and paid for right-wing strategy of message manipulation. Liberals are not, one, liberal organizations don't pay people to message. That's part of why we lose. Two, we're all over the board. We're not on a single-minded message. The right wing are, and there's a reason that they're on a single-minded message. There's a reason that somebody's posting from Busted Knuckle, West Virginia, looks the same as a right winger's posting from Dry Gulch, Arizona. Because they're all on the same message. And that's evidence of how, you know, we think we're ahead of them on the internet, as you've noted.
Right, right.
We're not.
That window's gone.
We're not. That window is closed.
It closed about two or three, maybe, who knows, maybe even 5 years ago. I mean, that's how fast the right wing has been. And, you know, the thing is that just this week, I had that paranoid moment because I picked up the phone. Someone was calling me, and it was the public policy polling, and they were calling for, who do you want the president to be? They asked me, are you favorable of Huckabee? Are you favorable of Romney? Are you favorable of Obama? Please press 1 if you are. Press 2.
And if you're favorable of Barack Obama, please press 972-385-104. And
no, it wasn't anything like that, but it was just so, I mean, it made me think that it was instantly a right-wing poll, that this was funded by a right-wing poll because it was automated. That's my cynical mind.
Well, yeah, robo-dialers are, the right-wing are.
Yeah, they're notorious for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've ever had anyone from public policy polling call from you.
I have, yeah.
Okay, are they right-wing or?
I don't know.
Yeah, I looked at their website. You can't really tell. If they are right-wing, they planted some good elusive Trojan horses to throw you off the path or whatever.
And, but that would be par for the course because who would ever think that a company innocuously named New Media Strategies would be out there with a sock puppet named MBM Admirer, scrubbing Wikipedia sites.
Yeah.
Among the things that this outfit did, and this is interesting, is they in editing these Wikipedia articles, they did everything in their power to put distance between the Koch brothers and the fact that they are the primary benefactors of the teabagging phenomenon.
Mm.
Because apparently the teabagging brand has become associated with ignorance, hatred, bigotry, superstition, and poor grammar. So necessarily, you've got to put some ideological distance in there.
That's the problem I've always had. You know, one of my friends who is in the music business, and this is just a tale to heed the same kind of warning that what you just said is he's in the music business, and he was quite vocal about a lot of things. And every time he tries to put up a page or something, it's always doctored, it's always flagged, it's always deleted. And that's part of the problem with that. That's part of the big problem I see with Wikipedia. When you have anything that's real information, it can be doctored so easily, it can be edited so easily, and you can't do anything about it. You can issue a complaint and say, someone's trying to change my page. But that's about it.
Right. Well, except in this case, Wikipedia went all the way to banning this clown.
Well, that's good.
The New Media Strategies employee, Jeff Taylor, is one of the people who holds MBM Admirer as a sock puppet on Wikipedia. So now they've admitted it. They've acknowledged that they work for Koch Industries, and they're trying to get back in the good graces of Wikipedia.
I'll tell you, the internet is going to be no joke for the right wing, and I've said this before. I mean, if you thought that they were Luddites when it comes to the internet, you better think again, because it's going to happen even faster than you think. You're going to be seeing something the right wing does, and you're going to be like, "Oh, I wish the left wing had that. Oh, I wish we would have done that." But they're going to have the money lined up. They're going to have that kind of coordination like they do with the, you know, Bob. You know why they excel it so well. Because they've had that 3 or 4 decades of multi-level marketing, number one, and number two, they're Jedi masters of direct mail.
Well, there's that, and the fact that they're willing to lie, cheat, and steal too, David.
Yeah, there's that too.
And don't forget the money part. Our side doesn't have organizations that throw money around like this. You know, I've got my little the Twitter account, and I watch. I've got a handful of people, a whole bunch of people, really, that I watch on Twitter. And none of these people are being paid to do what they do. They've just got good ideas and good minds. You know, they're people like Matt Osborne,
right?
And he puts his thinking out there, and you know, lets people see it for what it is. But it's not coordinated. Like it would be if there were a few thousand simoleons behind it. It does take money to run this stuff.
I hear you, and that's one of the things that's going to have to start happening is there's going to have to start beating or knocking on the door just a bit harder than we've done it before, because you know the fact that you have the new election cycle. Coming up, the fact you have that the internet is constantly evolving and changing, and the fact that the right wing has already caught up to us on the internet and skating past us.
Well, true, but I do want to mention something to you, and it's a very, very good thing. It's something that we were introduced to during the Progressive Voices cruise. There is an app for that now. It was released on March the 8th. I have already put it on our phone. You know, the one that we use when we like go on the road and do live Ustream with the phone and things like that.
Right.
But if you have an iPhone, and I suspect it will be available, I don't know for sure, but I can't imagine it wouldn't be. I suspect it will be available, in the BlackBerry, app store and in the Android app store. It's simply called Progressive Voices, and it is an aggregator. And it is a one-stop shop for all things liberal media.
Mm.
And for instance, you go to the talk page, and you know there's Hartman and there's Malloy, and maybe, hopefully, someday there'll be the Horn, which would just be awesome. And it's incredibly important because I feel kind of proud of this because we've been talking about this for as long as the Horn has been around. How do you take something like internet radio and make it more portable? How do you make it so that you can listen to it in your car, and thereby maximize the audience potential that terrestrial radio has. Well, this is that, David. And this is a step ahead of where the right wing is right now. And so I would encourage people, if you've got an iPhone, go and shell out the 99 cents. You know, it's a steal at 99 cents. Just to have the Progressive Voices app so that, bang, you want to listen to Leslie Marshall? There's Leslie Marshall. Bang, you want to listen to Malloy? There's Malloy. Bang, you want to listen to Hartman? There's Hartman. And it's all happening on your phone. It is the functional equivalent of the little tiny transistor radio that took the world by storm in the 60s.
That's good to hear. I did want to mention one thing regarding new media and new technology and new getting the liberal voice out and stuff like that. Are you aware of a podcast called Best of the Left?
Yes.
Yeah, I was looking at the website today. That's pretty impressive how he put that together.
It is very much so. Now, I don't have intimate familiarity with it. Go ahead and lay out a few details, please.
Well, the guy who puts it together, his name is Jay, and he developed it by listening to talk radio intensely on the liberal and progressive side. And he puts together a podcast where he compiles all the sound bites from the talk shows and the talk shows and just anything that has to do with a liberal voice. And he compiles it and he intersperses it with music. And I guess he does it like every 3 days or something. And he has over 2 million downloads. And I was just wondering, because I was looking at the podcast, I know you know where I'm going to go with this. I was like, huh, there's no head-on radio segments.
Yeah.
And he had some obscure names, and I was just wondering, like, I wonder if he knows about the horn. Maybe I'll email him and see what's up about
that. If you would do that, I'd appreciate it, because, you know, there are some great moments here. The biggest problem we have here is the long form nature of the program.
Yeah.
So things don't happen in like 45 seconds.
You have plenty of sound bites on your YouTube and.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. You might want to point out to him that there's great things to look at whenever Horzak posts a new clip on his channel.
Yeah.
And that's a good reminder to the folks listening as well. Over at YouTube, just subscribe to Horzak, H-O-R-Z-A-C. And he has a real good ear for what makes a nice clip.
I did want to mention one thing about, before I go, about the Libya thing, that what Andy was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best answer for the Libya is to just condemn what you're seeing, just to have everybody continuously condemn. And, yes, you are going to have the... And I'm sorry, you're going to have the casualties, and you're going to have that chaos. But the minute you step on any kind of foreign soil like that and proclaim something, you're immediately on the hook. And I think that's the problem, where a lot of people, they get excited and they say, well, we can help them. We can help these people. We can help them. And you don't know what can go wrong from 1 minute to the next.
That's the absolute truth.
You are rolling the dice, baby. And when you step on that soil, the other thing that, Bob, you have to remember this. When you step on the soil, you have to be prepared for everything is going to go to shit and going wrong. What's your plan during that time?
And it's almost impossible to plan for.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So it has to be at the utmost emergency. And I'm sorry, but
see, the Libyan thing is troublesome because the other side took up arms. Okay? Egypt worked because they didn't. Egypt worked because they were committed to nonviolence. The Libyan resistance, upon seeing the vicious, murderous nature of Muammar Gaddafi, decided that what Muammar Gaddafi's people needed was some equal treatment.
Right.
And therefore, that opens the door to people like Chinless Mitch McConnell saying, well, instead of having a no-fly zone, what we maybe ought to do is arm the insurgents. Because you know as sure as God made little green apples, David, You know that Mitch McConnell has all manner of defense contractors and arms merchants in his stock portfolio. Of course he's going to say that. It's good for Mitch McConnell.
Well, but I was actually wondering if Blackwater was going to be on the ground this week, or if they're already on the ground.
Yeah.
I guess I have to go to Rebel Reports and see what Jeremy Scahill is saying about that.
And you know, would Mitch McConnell the Newt Gingrich be saying, well, we ought to arm the insurgents? Would they be saying that if the people opposing Gaddafi were committed to nonviolence? Well, let's give them some rifles. No, because we don't want the rifles. That's not how we're doing this. And you know what? There's always the risk that the thug, the dictator, will come along and blow the living snot out of you. Nobody said that nonviolence is safe, or that nonviolence is for patsies or kumbaya singers. It takes a lot more guts to do nonviolence than it does to squeeze an effing trigger.
Mm. And you know, here's the other thing that people like Andy need to understand. You're looking at a country like Libya, and you look at the size of that landmass. When you use the word civil war, Bob, when you use the word civil war, you can't take it back. When you put that in the news and you say there is a civil war going on, but the truth, honestly, Bob, is that there are many places in Libya that the media is not focusing on that are not in quote-unquote chaos. They're not in this complete mess of a situation. They're just trying to get through life day by day. Go to work and so forth. But you see, the problem is the fact that we have this kind of media lens on a country like that. I'm sure you're aware of this. When you were watching Anthony Bourdain, when he was talking about the Haiti situation and the fact how the lens was so intensely focused on one area of Haiti and they always just wanted to show the sad faces.
Right.
I mean, that's the same thing that we have going on in the Middle East. Oh, it's so tragic. It's so sad. But you don't understand that there are so many places in so many cities and so many towns right now where they understand what's going on, but there's nothing happening in their town. There's nothing happening in this city in terms of these kind of violent conflicts. And we need to remember that. We need to understand. And here's the problem with that. This is why I've stressed this to Andy. As soon as you set foot in that country, and as soon as you start proclaiming what you're proclaiming in terms of war strategy and military, and you bring that option in, whether it's airstrike or whatever you want to do, you're going to spread it into those areas that are calm right now.
There you go.
And that's the problem. You know, I mean, that's that.
You mean getting your ass kicked by the law of unintended consequences?
The law of unintended consequences. You know, when I was looking at another Anthony Bourdain moment, when I was watching No Reservations, and they were talking about Cambodia, and I was like, my God, I think the GOP is trying to Khmer Rouge us right now.
If they could get away with it, they would. Yes.
Yes, that's what's happening little by little. Nobody's standing up against these religious fundamentalists in terms of people in the media that should be. Saying we don't roll like that, people, back down. That's not happening. We're having the James O'Keefe. We're having the radical fundamentalists out front. Mike Huckabee has a goddamn show, and constantly people are rolling this righteous rhetoric in us, and it goes back to, you know, man, just like what Kevin Smith is putting out now. We're getting red stated to death.
So true. So true.
And with that, I leave you with this. The best thing we can do, this is to Andy, the best thing we can do in any of these countries, and I'm sorry if this doesn't fit your of what you want for a response, but it's the closest thing we have. We need to focus on ourselves. We need to focus on our communities, and we need to condemn any acts of hatred, violence, and chaos in the world that is disrupting us from our goal of unifying as a planet. There you go.
Thanks, David. Take care.
All right, later.
All right, bye now. Yeah, David's got to get out to siphoning kerosene to fire up the Horn Extraordinary rendition jet to get Mr. Harpum to his front row seat where he'll be waterboarded in front of Peter King. Man, if he was a Muslim, Peter King would be masturbating on national television. Wouldn't he? Of course he would. William writes and says, no offense intended, Bob, many people these days are lucky to have a roof and food and are able to keep the electric on. I'm one of them. I'm damn lucky to have a used computer and a cheap internet connection. My point is, many people who need or want to hear your show or Malloy have no possible way of buying an iPhone. Hell, terrestrial radio is erasing most of Malloy's shows, yet you can get complete crap like Rhodes and Miller and Big Ed and Alan Freak Combs. And I understand that. That, you know, as long as the horn exists, there will always be an ultra-low bandwidth dial-up stream. Because since we're headquartered in West Virginia, we have a really, really highly functioning understanding of the fact that there's a lot of places that don't have anything approaching, the DSL or a cable modem. There's a lot of people out there downloading at 54 kbps and less. So there will always be a dial-up level stream for the horn. But on the other side of that equation, if we want to, I'm not asking anybody. I'm not in the business of selling iPhones. God. I'll be the last person on earth to ask you to go and buy an iPhone or any other Apple product or Microsoft product or whatever. Those bastards will have to pay me to like them. No, I'm much more comfortable suggesting that your skin is much better in much better company when it's being scrubbed by liberal big soap. From our friends over at Bubble Genius, or that maybe your morning or your lunch or your whatever will be made a little bit better with maybe some artisanal sausages from Binkert's. And again, not getting paid for this. It's just I like to identify things where the places where where we can make a difference. I got a note earlier today from the proprietor over at Binkert's, thanking me for the mentions. She said my babbling generated lots of activity in the online store, and she said for which we are truly grateful. Oh, believe me, I'm grateful to have a place where I can go and buy yummy stuff like that. And apparently it struck a chord with a lot of you. And do try it out, BINKERTS.com and Bubble Genius, BUBBLEGENIUS.com. Coming soon, by the way, from Bubble Genius, we're going to have, you can lather up with the horn. Yeah, we're going to have some horn soap, little logo and everything. Won't that be fun? Maybe we'll, offer them for sale or give them away as premiums for folks who are kind enough to contribute to keep things going here. You know, at some level or another, we're thinking constantly thinking about these things. But no, to get back to the point, I'm not trying to talk anybody into buying an iPhone. But the reality of it is, if you want to change the landscape of media in this country, we have absolutely got to make liberal ideas more ubiquitous in the culture, and that means breaking away from sitting in front of a computer to hear something like the horn. It's the fact that Flush Flimball, with a belly full of hillbilly heroin, can babble into a microphone and have a captive audience of people sitting in traffic or hurtling down some lonely interstate. That's where the reach comes in. And if we want liberal media to grow and become more effective and influence more people in this country, then we've got to be findable. And we've got to be accessible. And something like the Progressive Voices app is a very, very vital key in that process. And again, it's not just an iPhone. You know, I have a feeling it'll be out there for Android and the BlackBerry market, probably Windows apps, although I don't know the two people on Earth that own a Windows phone, but I hear they exist. So we will, enough of that, we will continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? It's been a little while.
It has been. It has been.
Yeah, so.
Is this Gary?
Checking back in. Yeah, this is Gary.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I'm glad I was listening, actually the last couple nights and last week or two, but I'm glad you really kind of pinpointed the identity of the so-called enemy in this country. I mean, the profile is what we've always known it is. So it's just a frustrated white male.
Don't forget terrified.
Yeah, terrified, scared, worried about extinction, whatever. I don't know what goes on in their heads. But, it's just between all of, I'm Obama supporter,
Right.
And between all the Obama, bashing and stuff, and look, I'm not saying he shouldn't be criticized or whatever. I think a lot of times what I hear is, I just get this feeling sometimes we just forget who the actual enemy is and all of that. I mean, sometimes it's just so much focus on the Democrats and what they're doing and not doing. And we tend to forget that, look at that profile. Like you said, it's not the Muslims. It's Scott Walker. If you look at the public option, you can argue about Obama not pushing it further. But the reality was it was Joe Lieberman and Max Baucus and the Republicans and everybody else out there who was voting against it. And most of who my white males. When you look at homophobia, most of the white males. I mean, yeah, we have the black church is involved.
Yeah, you've got Alveda King out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You got the Eddie Longs, those types who, come out against them and then find out they are.
Right.
But in general, we got to always try to maintain some level of focus on who the true enemy is. I don't want to say, like, enemy in terms of, like, they should be rounded up. because I think people have gone through that level of demonization, and that's not fair either. But I think that we have to pinpoint that their ideology and their fears need to be brought to the surface so that they can deal with them on a national level. And I think what, when the caller just called it, you just said, actually, was that the fact that this guy ain't even on the AP, well, he's actually on the AP, but the fact that the New York Times ain't even mentioning this guy is just, to me, another classic case of where the certain segment of the white male population, it's just, they just get a pass. It is amazing to me how they just get a pass. I just don't understand it.
Well, neither do I, Gary. And I mean, if you've got any insight into it, I'm wide open for it. No, please go ahead.
No, I would say this. In all of the things, when I've called in, or people say I'm a Obama apologist, there was an actual article, and I'm not really a big Shelby Steele fan. You know who he is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, writer. But he did write something about Obama that was interesting. But it's not really what was about Obama. He was just talking about a certain type of black male who works in a corporate environment, executive level. I've been there, so I understand that situation. And that he has to become an appeaser. But it's not because he's black. It's because they are white. Well, it's because you're black.
It's definitely the other side of the same coin, but the other side is as far different from the two sides are as far different from one another as night and day. It's not I think I understand what you're saying when you say it's not because he's black, it's because they're white. Because the same power dynamic does not obtain in a black structure or in an all white structure. There is an inherent inferiority in the relationship. Is that a fair analysis?
Yeah. Definitely. It's legacy, it's history, and then you tie on that, a nice mixture like you just said earlier, common fear, and aggression. I mean, when I played football, I still remember because as African Americans, there's a certain level of physicality you have at an early age compared to some of my white brethren, as I like to say, my lighter color. I don't like to say really black and white, but we're all the same. But
us pink folk.
But I know when we're in the locker room and just certain situations around them, you could feel even at that level, a certain level of intimidation, just from a physical presence standpoint, just being in the midst of it. It doesn't have nothing intellectual. Don't have to be intellectual. It's just the actual physical presence, and that is something that is common, no matter what the intellectual capacity of each individual is. If I'm in your presence, you may not know how smart I am, I mean, I smile at you. But if you're black and white, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, you are aware of us, and this is it's an unspoken feature.
No, I am aware of some of that because, you know, growing up in the South as I did, you know, I didn't go to segregated high schools or anything. I know exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, it's an unspoken fear, a certain level of tension. It's like a black man goes into a room by himself, you know, and he has to work the room. He has to come be palatable to those people in the room. And that's kind of like it took me years to learn how to do that. I mean, if I was kind of blessed in a way, I won't say blessed, but that white people always felt comfortable around me because I kind of understood them. A lot of my friends when I grew up, I grew up around a lot of Italians and Jewish people. So when you're dealing with like white immigrants, they're so close to kind of like the black experience to some degree that I can, you find a way to get into their commonality. And you say, okay, I understand. You know what I'm saying? Where if I was dealing with somebody who's just straight up Southern white person who probably doesn't have a strong ethnic background, you know, like from New York or whatever.
The word we're looking for here, Gary, is cracker. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's a, yeah, no, I can, no, I can. I can
use the C word.
Yeah, I can. No, you know, Scots Irish and been in the country for 250 years. And at that point, you reach the stage of, where, you know, to quote the old line about George Bush, that where you were born on third thinking you just hit a triple. You know, where white privilege becomes so ingrained in the culture that that you eat it, you sleep it, you breathe it, you drink it, and you never even know it's there. It white privilege in that circumstance is literally like air. You're absolutely unaware of it until such time as it isn't there anymore. Make sense?
And that's why, yeah, exactly. And that's what I was going to say, like, so every time I see, like, Obama and I see people criticize and fuss at him, as a black male, you know, I kind of say, okay, he's a part of me. I'm just like you. I'm like, Obama, just go up there and slap the hell out of Boehner. Slap that white man. You know, like, there's part of me say that. But then there's part of me.
Well, like, did you hear Sandra the other night say,
that white man, you're going to be noosed up. You know, yeah. It's there, you know.
Yeah, but you may have heard Sandra the other night, Gary, say just once, I'd love to hear, love to see Obama just get real scary. And just watch all the white people come unglued. Because they would.
Well, you know, he did do that. I mean, you remember, like, a year ago, you know, when we first met, you know, you had brought it to me. He was at that thing. It was actually the same day I met you. Remember when he got up and he got up on the Republicans and he got in their face that day, you know, when they were.
Yeah, I remember that well.
He went black on them. I mean, he just told them straight and said, you're lying. And he said, and you know it's not true. I mean, he really just went to them. And Rado Macho, I mean, all of them just, they had a special show and they were just so impressed and everything in that.
Look how the white controlled for profit media lost their tiny minds. Oh, he's an angry black man.
Yeah, but what happened to the Obama? He came out one day black and he disappeared.
Right. No, you don't do that anymore because, you know, the for profit media showed him. Don't you do that. Mm-mm. Because we'll call you an angry black man, and we'll start circulating that email with your Kenyan birth certificate on it some more.
Yeah. I would love to see him go Jack Johnson. I mean, it would be just a black man. There's a part of guilt in me just love to see it. I mean, any black man would tell you that they're lying if they're not. Just to see a black man telling off a white man. Not you. I love you and Malloy's and all those guys. I know, you know, I don't agree with you guys all the time, but I know where your heart's coming from. You know, and I know that we are in the same place ultimately. You know, I may not agree with the strategy, but...
No, see, you know, I've said this before, Gary, and I'll say it again. I'll say it all the way to November 2012. I know who I'm voting for in November 2012. Because the idea of President Huckabee, the idea of President Willard Romney with the family dog strapped to the top of the car as they drive from Massachusetts down to Washington, D.C., with poor Fido screaming his lungs out... No.
With a religious organization behind him, got more money than the Catholic Church? Yeah, that would be a very big... You want to talk about some Sharia law, you're going to see some Mormon law coming up in here.
Yeah, no. And right. And where, you know, where's the fear over Mormon law? Because I don't see any... Oh, well, wait a minute. I was about to say I didn't see any Muslim presidents, but half the country's convinced that we've got one right now. So, well, there that goes. But your point is well taken. So, you know, I hope you understand... you know, I criticize Barack Obama from a position of wanting him to be what he can be, of wanting him to break out of this Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, but I'm always wondering, as a black man, knowing what I've seen, I just always feel about the white. First of all, him getting president is like a miracle. Sometimes I still, when I remember that night when it happened, I just couldn't believe it. So there's part of me still saying that I don't even think he can possibly exist in this country. Yeah, maybe in another country, some other places like that. But if Obama comes out and be just totally, you know, I'm not saying black, just become totally, just stand firm and say exactly what. See, let me just put it this way real quick. I know you probably may start to get other calls. But let's look at this whole tax debate. You know, people keep talking around and beating around the bush about the taxes and cutting the wealthy. All this is about is this, and I think you've kind of said this before in an abstract way or maybe a direct way. The reason why the tax cut for the rich is because the people who are getting the tax cut is white. We must take away from the blacks. We've got to take those wealth. It doesn't matter if a bunch of white people are getting
Yeah, why aren't we messaging on that? Why aren't we calling it, you know, Barack Obama re-extended the tax cut for the white?
You mean the white rich. You mean he did it during the campaign? When he said they cling to their guns and their religion, he started to go there. What happened?
Yep.
He started to get the Trump out. He was going to say, and he had to do it in a closed door mention place in San Francisco and say, look, we got a group of white people who just are scared crap. And they just like us, but they being manipulated. That's where he was going. But when he got into the clinging on their guns, which is true, and talking about clinging on their Bibles, which is true, you know, that with their false religions, is that he was exposing them in a way that the media said, uh-oh.
No, that was unacceptable. Yeah.
So he's got to wear the whole cake, because that's the whole cake. The whole cake is keeping the unemployed white man who's just like the little inner city boy, ain't got no job, he's on cocaine and crack. Oh, but now we got the meth out there. You know what I'm saying? So now we got the white boy kind of like I did, all strung up too. But we can't let both of them get together and get a real high on some real shit. Excuse my friend.
No, that's okay, because I was going to ask
you.
Let's
have some real stuff like Wisconsin. You know what I'm saying? Then, now we got Egypt on you. And that's when we got a problem. So, no, Obama's being monitored and watched. And
and he wants to be in the job for 8 years and not four. I'm a political realist. I understand that dynamic. But by the same token, where this country is concerned, when was the last time I opened and this is not to say that I know all, see all, but when's the last time I had a story? When's the last time you read a story, saw a story about the cops knocking down the door of some ostensibly middle-class black dude living in the middle of the country with 5 gun safes and 300 firearms and enough ammunition to form his own army? Well, the short answer,
why
you haven't seen that story
MLK
because that story doesn't exist. Right.
Why is he blowing up an MLK? What did these people at a parade do to him? I really would like to have a conversation with this guy.
Well, he wanted to blow up.
Band members walking. This guy's crazy.
No, stop, Gary, I'm going to stop you right there. Don't you dare say he's crazy. Now, I'm not being mean or anything, but don't give him that. Because he is as sane as you and I. But his sanity is the kind of sanity that has room in it for race hate, okay? The race hate is not a form of insanity; it's a form of evil. And so this guy saw taking out little children, be they black or white, as acceptable because they are the enemy. The black people he took out, or the dark skinned people he took out, he would have taken out simply because they were the enemy. He probably would have rejoiced it even more to take out white people there because they were traitors to their race. That's the way that sick, wormhole-infested, right-wing, white supremacist brain works.
Please note, when I say crazy, very much a slip of the tongue. I'm 100% agree with you, because I know white men. So I 100% agree with you. It's no different me than a terrorist who talks about 10 virgins and puts on and blows up a whole bunch of people. Yes, they are saying you have to have a certain level of sanity just to do certain things. So I agree with you. It's not some fetish like a serial killer who's doing something else. There's a specific motive of destroying something and making something non-existent, and that is hate. You know, it's not. It's the same. So I agree with you, no doubt, 100,000%. That the person.
And it'll be, you know, it'll be if this guy is he's been charged, if he's arraigned and tried and convicted, it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to note that at no point in time, as I've said with these other right-wing killers, at no point in time will they be able to mount an insanity defense. I don't even think Jared Lee Loeffner will get away with an insanity defense, because the insanity defense is a very, very strict and rigorous standard in the American law. And as such, one of the things that the for-profit media is also never any good at is pointing out that the white supremacist was convicted today, and he was found to be as sane as you and me. So let's stop this business of he was a deranged, crazy loner. You know, this guy, this guy in Washington, Gary, has all kinds of infrastructure behind him. Websites and how to. You know, you don't really rat poison in the bomb so that people would bleed freely after the shrapnel ripped them in two? Really? Rat poison? You know, you don't just come up with that because you're looking, you know, because you've seen the creepy little thing down in the corner in the dark, and you get a box of the stuff and it says contains warfarin, and you look it up and it says warfarin. Oh, it causes free bleeding. It's the same thing that's in the drug Coumadin. Well, why don't I put some of that in my backpack bomb? That's not how that process works, Gary. There are field manuals out there for white supremacist right-wing Christian killers. Sorry, I just kind of went off for a second, but I didn't mean to.
No, I'm kind of from somewhat of aware of you, but you know, I didn't want to stop you. I never want to stop you when you in one of your rants, because it needs to be, you know, some things need to come out, and some things just need to be said. You know, whether people want to listen to it, at least somewhere, some part of this universe, someone has just registered what you just said in their brain, and who probably was not of our, you know, political point of view, and maybe that would help the situation if it's just one person, you know. But what I was going to say is that, but let's just not stop with this one terrorist thing. We also got to look at this economic terrorist. I mean, Scott Walker technically is terrorizing people. He's threatening their jobs if he doesn't get his freaking way on something that doesn't even matter to the budget. He is committing terrorism. Why can't he be arrested? You know, what you know what I'm saying? What kind of law is it that a man can threaten people's jobs and livelihood?
That's a very, very good point.
That's not even connected to the budget.
That's a very good point. And you know what? There are other places in this country where, not in this country, but in this world, where he would be, because the United States is not signatory to the UN Declaration on Human Rights. And the UN Declaration of Human Rights states unequivocally that the right to freedom of assembly and the right to form unions are an undeniable human right that cannot be breached. He would be in violation of the law in many civilized countries.
And I think what you just said is critical. I think at this point, you know, I think somebody had mentioned this before, that there needs to just be a basic human right issue for a person. In other words, you have to be able to, you know, provide X, Y, and Z for your citizen, or it's a violation of our human rights. Not the world human rights, but an American human rights. You know, it's written in the Constitution. In all the declarations, basically, you know, in terms of the welfare of the citizens, of citizenship. I mean, that's kind of part, you know, part of it. You know, the general welfare of the public. You know, I mean, that's the whole point of having any kind of legal binding document. Is, you know, that's, you know, for the entire population. I mean, that's
right.
The point. You know,
there's so many places we can point to this kind of stuff, Gary. I just had a note from Marty out in California. You know, another one of those underreported stories, like Shauna Ford in Arizona, he writes. You know, here's a little girl who was gunned down by white people who just took it upon themselves to go in and gun down some dark-skinned people in the name of patriotism, in the name of anti-immigrant sentiment.
And it's not black and white, because they'll gun down, like you said earlier, they'll gun down a liberal or a Jew in a minute. I mean, there's, like you said, that's even Steven, as far as they're concerned, a black, anybody who's liberal on that side, because in the end, you're kind of like, you know, you like black people, you know, or you like, you know, you're the one who's, what you tainting the race, so to speak. So it's still that legacy. But the only thing I was going to say about the economic terrorism, then I'll go on this, is that, you know, when you look at the whole banking system, and this is where I think that, you know, I think Sandra talks about a lot, is that when you look at these banks and what they have basically done, but this, I mean, this is just basically terrorism. And it's just amazing to me. You know, I was reading some stuff with Matt Taibbi. I mean, I actually read that stuff, but I was reading a book you told me about, Free Lunch. And it's just amazing to me what they have done to the system. And it's just like, you know, again.
Well, that in conjunction with something like
going to jail.
Yeah, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. You know, there's another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, just to give you a little update, I've heard from our news ninja Susan and Clayton as well on email. The Wisconsin Senate got around the absence of the quorum, and they have passed the union busting bill.
How do they do that?
If I understand correctly, they took it, they separated it out completely from anything having to do with fiscal matters, which goes to prove, as you noted, that it has nothing to do with the budget, and so they did not have to have that quorum there, and therefore were able to do their dirty will.
Okay.
Crooks and Liars has a link up right now, pointing to.
All right. Well, it's just recall time. It's just recall time. You want to get stupid? Then we got to get stupid. But, you know, and that whole thing there is like the whole Wisconsin thing, you know. I'm not going to go into that now. But that whole thing there is just another classic example of, you know, it's just, people just getting a pass. And I just don't understand why, you know, they continue to let these white men get a pass under the guise of just being this whole abstract sense of entitlement and whiteness. I mean, it's like, let's give to the wealthy. We don't give a damn if people go out to the poor and starve and stuff. As long as we not one black person or one Mexican or some or one homosexual or one woman trying to get an abortion or whatever gets $1, we'll give $1 billion to the rich people. And the enemy again is the people who continue to vote these people in. Bob, I mean, the people in Wisconsin was running around, oh, we mad with Obama. We're not going to come support Obama. Okay, well, you didn't support him. You didn't support Russ Feingold. Now look what you got. I mean, it's really sad, man.
No, there's a hell of a lot of wake up in Wisconsin, but the thing is, if there's any benefit to it, I think the wake up has happened.
I don't think racism though. You think they've gotten over the racism? See, that's my problem.
No,
wake up and there you go. If you don't get over that, I don't know, man. I don't think it's going to ever get solved because they'll just have something else to bitch about tomorrow. You know.
Well, there will always be something out there available to divide working people. You know, if you look back at the history, for instance, of this state, where I am, the UMWA was founded as an integrated union, and maybe the first one, an integrated union from day one. And there were, and one of the essential problems in organizing in this state is that there were a lot of miners, a lot of white folks, didn't like that. They didn't want to have to call one of them a union brother. And that took a lot of work to get past. There were a lot of union, a lot of labor movements that had that were whites only. And a lot of ugliness there.
I think we need more people like you, Malloy, and all these other people. You know, I've listened to more Malloy for a couple of years. He really gets it, and it was a rare voice I've heard, you know, hear a white man calling out white people because you just don't hear it. You know, I can go to any voice and hear black people on any radio station talking about black people and the stuff that we do. But you just don't hear a lot of people in the media, especially white media. It's almost like it's a note of you cannot say nothing about white racism. It's a very, like, touchy subject. And it's even in, you know, in general.
But I think the reason for that is for those who do it and for those who don't do it and don't do it innocuously, it's because white privilege is like air. You have to, as a white person, you have to be taught about white privilege. You have to be taught to look around and see it around you. Because otherwise you're just a fish in water and wet doesn't mean anything.
But in the economic reality that we're in now, we understand, as you know, it's a lie now, you know?
Yeah, it's
a big lie now. So is anybody teaching people? No, there's no white privilege right now. There is wealth privilege. It's you against the billionaire, the ones, you know, like Michael Moore's speech.
Yeah, but there aren't that many dark-skinned members of that class, at least not in the United States. So wealth privilege is still a function of white privilege, by and large, in this country. The number of African American millionaires is still a pretty slim damn number.
Yeah. Well, somebody got to get out there in the media and, you know, Chris Matthews, I don't know, whoever's on your show, they need to start talking. I know Keith has brought it up and other people. Somebody at some point needs to do a special. You know, I see all these specials like, you know, black in America, you know, Jew in America, you know.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Yeah.
We don't see one say white in America. You know, I want to see one that's white.
Yeah, because you know what? I would tune in
white,
to see.
White ringers.
I would tune in to see see Chris Matthews do an episode of White Like Me. Yeah, sorry, that's just funny.
No, but just on these crazy, and I'm just saying on these crazy white people, just do a...
Yeah, oh, no, I know. I know what you mean. I just had this vision of the Chris Matthews and his little prep school reptile. And, yeah, white like me.
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, it's good hearing from you, brother. You have a good night.
Hey, when I, you know, I've been a little tight, you know, with things, so, but, you know, I'm thinking about it, so whenever I get a little blessing, so to speak, you know, I'll take care of you.
I understand, and we do appreciate it, brother. You take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Right. Gary calling from Maryland, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up? Dirty bastards. Dirty, dirty bastards.
What they did was they took, they created their own conference committee in the Senate. Basically, this is, I haven't seen something like this since the last time I read up on Teapot Dome. I mean, this is just stinks. They created their own conference committee in the Senate, separated out the union-busting portions of the bill.
Right.
Voted real fast on those. And, of course, since there were no financial parts in those.
They didn't have to have the quorum.
Right. So, wham, bam, they're gone.
And apparently...
And then Governor Wanker gets on and proceeds to gloat.
Well, the question is, what will people in Wisconsin do now? Will they dry up and go away, or will they continue the pressure?
I really hope they call a general strike.
You know what will happen when they do that, right?
I don't mean just the public employees.
No. I don't mean just the public. No, a general strike is not a general strike unless it's a general strike. But you do know what'll happen when that if that takes place.
Yeah, they'll try and bring in the National Guard, and that's when Barack Obama has to stick his nose.
They will use Taft-Hartley. Okay, I've been thinking about this for a while. Taft-Hartley contains provisions to make sure that what you're describing is not legal.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is important, every union that participates in it,
I agree.
Will be financially broken upon the rack of the Federal Department of Justice. And if you don't think that Eric Holder will jump right out to prosecute this, well, we're not paying attention.
You can't get him off his ass to do anything else, but you can get him to do that.
And if Barack Obama should happen to not do that, then impeachment is on. They already have talked about impeachment over the DOMA issue. Can you imagine the furor in the House of Representatives? They would impeach him yesterday. This is what they're waiting for.
There is one other possibility, and I've been thinking about this for quite a while, ever since this whole thing started. I was thinking the smart teachers have already started sending out resumes. The smart workers have started sending out resumes elsewhere. Now, they can break the union for a strike. They cannot stop people from quitting their jobs and leaving the state.
true to a point.
That's not a strike.
True to
you
a point.
Up and leave town.
And leave your mortgage and your car payment and your insurance payment. This is, you know, a moment ago. Go ahead.
That's why I was saying the smart ones were sending out resumes when this started.
When Gary mentioned economic terrorism a few minutes ago.
That's what this is.
That is what this is.
This is economic terrorism. Yes, it is.
And
I agree with you.
Bear in mind that given the structure in this country and the nature of our for-profit media, they have already proven themselves willing to describe the working people as the terrorists. Now, the fact of the matter is, Wisconsin cannot afford to rehire an entire army of scab teachers. And Scott Walker is about to be presented with something really, really ugly.
Yeah.
The prospect of firing every teacher in the state of Wisconsin. And then hiring scabs. And as an advocate of nonviolence, I find that to be a terrifying prospect because there is nothing lower on the planet than a scab. A scab is a different form of human life. And I don't trust, as polite and decent as people are in Wisconsin, I don't necessarily trust them to feel real good about watching their homes get foreclosed on, their cars get repoed, their credit get ruined by a scab.
Yeah. And that's what's going to happen, because he'll fire them. And what's going to stop this is the immediate recall. Is, you know, the recall of petitions that are circulating right now, is if those recall elections succeed. That will stop this thing in its tracks.
But those recall elections also take time, and the one person who most badly needs recalled has to be in office for a year before he can be.
Send Bacon.
You mean Walker?
Yeah. Sending bacon.
And butter.
Chunks.
Yeah.
Butter.
Well, I mean, it's a cheese state. Yeah.
Egg. You know, eggs. Anything with high cholesterol. One can always hope for a heart attack. I know that is a bad thing for me to say, and I'm probably going to pay for it, but hey.
Well, this is a guy who joked about using Louisville sluggers on union members, so he's probably already earned the karma.
Yeah. He's gonna claim this is gonna create 250 new jobs. Yeah, scabs!
And those Wisconsin test scores are gonna go through the floor, at which point Scott Walker declares that public education is a failure and we need vouchers. There you go.
And if I were the people of Wisconsin, there is going to be such a bloodbath electorally. Agent Fred, I said electorally. Come election time, there will not be another Republican elected in that state for the next 100 years.
Those recalls have to succeed. It is critical. If they don't, party over.
And, oh, God, people, they're broadcasting live from there now. And all those people are pissed.
They have a right to be.
Yeah. Because... basically they were conned into thinking that they were going to be, you know, they were going to get a compromise. And then they dropped the bomb on them. Nobody does dirty tricks better than a Republican.
Well,
there's a
line in the chat room from Benedict saying, "No problem, Bob. You're right. We're defeated. Let's just give up." When did I say give up? When did I say give up?
I didn't.
But you know what? Do this with full knowledge of the consequences. Because the consequences are significant.
Now, you see, the reason I mentioned teachers quitting is because I knew those teachers, they're going to get fired anyway. Now, which is better on your resume? I quit rather than I was fired.
And?
It looks better on your resume to say you quit.
Yeah, but it also precludes you from workers' compensation. That's the other thing. Does Scott Walker realize that he's about to crash the workers' compensation system? Probably does.
He probably doesn't give a rat's ass.
He would like to crash the workers' compensation system. You see, that's the thing, Susan. This is all thought out. This isn't sort of happening organically.
No, the whole idea is to crash the economy again. So that come 2012, they vote Republican.
And just remember, after all that money that you're saving in Wisconsin, you can give it to the Koch brothers and their ilk.
I can guarantee you, Wisconsin is not going to vote Republican come 2012. It's not going to do it. They're pissed. These people are really, really pissed.
Well, if they get those recalls done, then the law can, I would assume that the law can be reconsidered.
Yeah, because then...
Or recalled, even.
Then the control switches. In the Senate, at least, to the Democrats. And then they have a check on him. And then all they've got to do is basically filibuster him for the next until his year's up, and then boot him out of office.
And that may happen if they still have the energy. But remember, part and parcel of this is to defeat the union's ability. This has nothing to do with salaries and has nothing to do with budgets, as Gary mentioned. This has to do with breaking the unions so that the unions don't have the money to contribute to the campaigns. Because, you see, Citizens United opened a door for corporations and unions. Very few people remember that. But if you've broken the unions, then there's no way that Citizens United money can be sent into Democratic campaigns by unions.
But you also have to remember the revenge factor.
I hope it's very real. I hope it's very, very real.
Oh, these people are out for blood. And I hope they take it in little itsy-bitsy increments out of the death of a thousand cuts from dear old Governor Wanker. Vote by vote.
Well, I'd be interested to know what the time frame is for the recalls. I know they've got like 30 days to gather the signatures, and they've got to get a lot of signatures.
They've got to get 25% of the last election. Now, admittedly, the last election was pretty low. And as of, I saw a report yesterday, they already had 15% of them. And they'd only been circulating petitions for 2 days. People are really, really ticked at these people. So, and with this happening now, I don't think they're going to have any problem at all getting those signatures. Now, the kicker is getting the election. Because I've been to quite a few recall elections. It's not the signatures that are the problem. It's the election that you got to win. And that's going to be a kicker.
Well, this is one of those little seminal moments in American history, Susan.
Mm-hmm. I hope they win. I really hope they win. If you can spare some money, people, over and above what you give to the horn, get online and send it to those Democrats in Wisconsin. They're going to need it.
Or maybe even wait and see who the campaigns are against the Republicans and support those.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there aren't going to be any recall campaigns against the Democratic senators. It's going to be against Republicans. And the
actually,
other side,
there already are.
Recall campaigns against the Democrats?
Yeah. Against some of the 14 that left the state. Well, the Republicans, they can finance anything, honey.
Well, sure they can. But that's the important
thing. Financed a recall campaign. The thing is, it's not going to go anywhere. With the amount of anger in the state, with this, what happened? No. It's not going to, they're not going to win that election. And they're coming right out on the mainstream news, coming right out saying, hey, this is not about budgets and this is not about anything but busting the unions, because that way.
Well, it's all completely obvious at this point. The argument about the budget is gone. The argument about fiscal responsibility is gone. What the Wisconsin Senate did made it abundantly clear that the only issue here now is, well, there it is, breaking the union. Susan, got them stacked up. Got a roll. Thanks for hanging in there. I appreciate it.
Love to you and Agnes and Governor Wanker. I hope you get what you deserve. Three times over.
There you go. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Susan. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. And let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark, your fellow union brother.
Hey, Mark, what's happening, man?
What's up, Devil Dog?
I don't know it.
You know, I guess it's called Tupelhunden. That's the dogs of hell. For the last lady, her intuitions, you know, women save lives and men take lives. So I listened to her, and thank goodness for Mother Jones, an immigrant from Ireland, who has the intuitions of the last caller, women protecting lives of all. Mother Jones is buried in my state. She traversed through your state, and that makes you and I brothers from before the beginning. We are, we just let her know that everything she said was neat and cool, but union people don't need resumes. Resumes are for company people. I actually listened to one person say, have the politicians come back from my state of Illinois and have them be arrested, and that's the same philosophy. Any case, we're not worried about it. She is right, and you are right, and we are right, and I don't. Can you talk to me, Bob? I'm a little emotional. I just went and got some pizza, and I. Can you ask me a question?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, that's more than okay. What kind of pizza?
I got a thin crust, very crispy. Reminds me of the pizza from Springfield at Vic's Pizza. Very thin crust and sausage, mushroom, and onion.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite combinations. Yeah, honest to Pete, it really is. Sausage, mushrooms, and onions. You mentioned Mother Jones. You know, there's a strong reverence for her in labor communities here in West Virginia, simply because of what she, you know, the force that she brought to bear. The right wing and the industrialists hated her guts. And at one point she was called the most dangerous woman in America. And only because, for no other reason than the fact that she stood up for working people and insisted that they insist upon their rights. One of the things that I've always found fascinating is that if you go, you know who Smedley Butler is, right?
Yeah, he was in my Marine Corps.
Yes, and was asked to lead the coup, was asked by the Bush family, among others, to lead the coup against Franklin Delano Roosevelt, refused. Wrote the book War is a Racket. Well, it was sometime back that I was looking at Smedley Butler's the chronology of his life, not even necessarily a biography. At one point, he left the Corps and went to work in security in West Virginia. And I've done some looking. I have never had any real success in finding out any more than that bare detail. But what I find fascinating, Mark, is that he did that at the same time that Mary Harris Jones was in West Virginia. And it's after that that he begins to have his sea change and realizes that he's been sent all around the world, from the Philippines to Nicaragua to Haiti, as nothing more than an enforcer of corporate American corporate rights. As he writes in War is a Racket. And I would love to know if maybe being here at the same time that Mary Harris Jones was raising her ruckus might have had some influence on his thinking.
Based on me and you talking, and you and me not knowing each other, and knowing exactly who each other is, I'm guessing there's something to that. You know, his parents were Quakers, right?
Yeah.
And Smedley Butler had a young lieutenant work for him in 1925 in China. I only went in the Marine Corps in 1977, which is modern to some old people that are probably no longer with us. But we all have to start somewhere. But you talk about Chesty Puller and Smedley Butler and Dan Daly and Butler. We're in China, but they really talk to you about in Marine Corps boot camp about a Boxer Rebellion, but that's really a people's movement because, see, Standard Oil was there in 25, and the same reason we were in Vietnam in 1965, or actually in 1945, and Michelin Tires. And I asked a Marine, Bob, when I wanted to go on deployment, I was a combat engineer working for 3rd FSSG, 3rd Force Service Support Group in Okinawa. And I wanted to go on deployment, so I had to take a logistics course to do that. And the instructor was a Korea and Vietnam veteran. And at the completion of the course with a decent grade point average, I asked this tall, I believe, southern white male Marine if it didn't offend him, if it was appropriate for him to tell me what he thought Vietnam was about. I'm ginger with us because he said, son, you really want to know the truth? And I said, if it doesn't offend you, sir. And he said, I don't like certain officers, but he was enlisted and he was Southern and I served him. And he said, son, that war is about gold, oil, diamonds. And I said, you're serious? And he said, yeah. Deadly serious is what he said, was his answer. So I would share about Smedley Butler. He had a young lieutenant work for him in China named David M. Shoup. I don't know what the M stood for, but Shoup. When I worked at Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant, I shot down to the Kennedy Library, and I was digging around in the part, Bob, where, you know, kind of like going to Crackers where you look out at the stuff on the floor there. And I said, I don't see anything. And a woman heard me that works there. And she said, well, maybe you need to go upstairs. And I thought I was kind of in trouble at first. She said, here, let this older guy take you up there. So now when I went up to the research library at the Kennedy Library, and I'm thinking there was going to be college kids in their 25s and 35s, but they were in their 50s and 60s and 40s. So when I got up there, they had printed off some stuff for me and they handed it to me and I paid for it. And, I read it. It was an interview with David M. Shoup. Now, I found that interesting because when I worked at the American Embassy, Bob, in 1979 through 81 under President Carter, I had stumbled through the interest section of communications at the embassy. And I found a book written by the same Marine, David M. Shoup, but he'd gone on to become from a lieutenant to a general, four-star general, and he said that the only thing that stops America from being at war 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, was in fact only the United Nations. And he referred to it as a speed bomb. And it wasn't a sarcastic Rush Limbaugh book. It was theoretical. But ironically, Bob, I thought you might appreciate, he worked for Smedley Butler. So Kennedy asks Shoup about Vietnam, and Shoup tells him, in quotation, do not put boots on the ground in Southeast Asia. And then those boots on the ground, you know, for all the faggot John McCain's that can fly over in a jet, it takes boots on the ground to seize the territory, kind of like West Virginia, you know, people with boots on the ground with gloves on their hands and rocks under their feet. So, you know, technology only works up to a point, and then it takes people with actually a little bit of heart and soul. So it all kind of came together for me, and I would let folks know that the Koch brothers from the teabag bags financed the Cold War. So, and that's why Ronald Reagan didn't know the wall was coming down because they told him when it would be coming down. So that's where we're at. Am I okay? I got going a little bit.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I did a little quick research. David M. Shoup, the 22nd Commandant of the Marine Corps.
Correct.
And in fact, you know, he is not the only one to tell John Kennedy not to commit ground troops to Asia. Because a very old and frail Douglas MacArthur, sitting in his hotel suite in New York City, delivered the same advice, if I recall correctly, to a young John Kennedy. No ground wars in Asia. And so that, you know, that was actually the first thing I thought of, Mark, when I saw the remarks from Robert Gates, you know, the current Secretary of Defense, saying a guy would have to be crazy to commit troops to another war in the Middle East, American troops to another war in the Middle East or Asia.
Right. And, you know, I was I was out in California working in San Onofre nuclear generating station, which they abbreviate SONGS. I shot down because I wasn't working enough overtime down in Los Angeles to the book fair. And I went and listened to, James Shearer from the Los Angeles Times, and at the book fair, and there were people waiting to speak, and I just was sitting next to the line, and a well-dressed guy, and started talking to me, and he was Iranian-American and a doctor, and he said, you know, he wasn't saying it derogatorily or whatever the word is, but he said, if you go into Iran, I'll fly back there. And he said, whatever our background is, we will compile on you, and our differences will be put aside at that time. So I think other callers and yourself, I've listened to you. I think people like you and I, Bob, our humanity prevails or tries to at most turn. So, yeah, if we make that mistake, and I imagine, thank God for Gates. You know, I think he's maybe a native Texan, but he seems like he started out a Democrat. I think he's a Southern Democrat. Maybe he goes back to Carter. Am I right there by any chance?
I'm not sure. I know he did. He came out of an academic environment. I think he was chancellor or president or whatever of Baylor University when George W. tapped him to be SecDef.
Well, I think if we take that, it would be because of, you know, his heart and intellect, but also the political climate at the time. They wanted somebody that would appeal, kind of like if we look at Colin Powell. Colin Powell was a nice young lieutenant or captain that from the United States was sent to Vietnam to investigate the U.S. Army's AmeriCal division in a purported crime of genocide, eventually relabeled the My Lai Massacre, where a Southern helicopter officer pilot U.S. Army and a Northern co-pilot from, I don't know where, maybe Ohio or Wisconsin or somewhere, decided they were going to set their chopper down and stop this eight-hour slaughter of women, children, and old men, like you'd see in West Virginia. And that Southern warrant officer just died of cancer recently. I think he was living in Georgia. And that My Lai Massacre, for the Americans that made the eavesdropping on us, lasted a little over 8 hours, and those great patriotic Rush Limbaugh Republican soldiers stopped for an hour, Bob, and had lunch, literally an hour.
And then started up the killing again.
Right. Now, the guy who breaks that story is a Jewish American whose dedication is to America first. And I would also let people know that there was a Jewish American who tried to tell us about what happened with Lyndon Baines Johnson and the USS Liberty, and that was none other than Daniel Ellsberg, not a neocon, my country first, a Jewish person. You see, I guess I've alluded to it accidentally. I really don't know for sure about my heritage. I know I'm a Dirksen from Illinois. We were the tail end of the Abraham Lincoln Republicans. I'm a Hankins, which would look like West Virginians in color and work ethic and love of people. And Hankins come in through Virginia, and you got some Hankinses in the South. But together, I don't want Germany. I don't want Ireland. I don't want Lithuania. I don't want anybody from another country running my nation. I want Bob Kincaid. I want Juanita who calls. I want Americans to run the United States. I want President Jimmy Carter and President Bill Clinton and President Harry Truman and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I want Frederick Douglass. And I want Smedley Butler. And I want Bob Kincaid's family to run America. I don't need somebody from another country, no matter where they think that they perceive themselves to be from. Not the individual, but those nations' influence over our politics is really wrong. We need to be.
Well, that's Mark. It's interesting you would bring that up because I have an internal struggle going on here because I was schooled and I have so much reverence for Eastern cultures. I've said before that of all the religions on the planet, given how long they've been thinking about this stuff, if anybody has figured out any portion of it, it's probably the people on the Indian subcontinent. And yet, at the same time, here's a company from India that wants to destroy the place that I live. And they will stop at nothing to get their way.
Right. Now, those would be the people that that Martin Luther King did not study. Those would be the neo-capitalist, neoliberal extremists. I was listening to your show when you started, and they are none other than billionaires, regardless of where they're from. And this is what we are all up against in the world. I mean, the people in Tunisia and the people in Egypt were up against billionaires. I didn't know Mubarak was worth $70 billion. I mean, and those two brothers from India that are getting ready to knock the rest of the mountains off in West Virginia are billionaires, without a doubt. So
yeah, they've made part of their fortune on Vodafone India, a cell carrier, and they've got steel interests and mining interests, and and this is sort of a modification of something I've said in the past.
Sure.
It's not the brown people, it's not the pink people. It's not any of the shades of people in between that are the biggest threat to the continued existence of humanity on the planet, Mark. It's the gold people. It's the gold people. And the gold people are the Koch brothers and Shashi and Ravi Ruia. of India who want to destroy my home. And I don't hate them because they're Indians or because of their skin color. I hate them because they apparently hate me. Because they hate me enough to destroy where I live, to ruin the lives of my friends, my family, my neighbors, my children, the very hope that I have of progeny down the line. They want to poison the air. They want to poison the water. They don't care if we live or die, and it doesn't matter if they are Indian or American or British or Dutch or Japanese, Chinese, Australian. It does not matter. They are gold people because they worship at a blood-soaked altar devoted to nothing but the acquisition of solid gold.
Well, Bob, if you take the appropriateness in your heart for your region and your family, and watch how you feel about that. Please identify with the Montagnards or the people in China where the Bechtel Corporation is building with the California pension money the world's largest dam. They had to remove a lot of
The Three Gorges, yes, and the massive strip mining complexes that are going to be opened by Peabody Mining of St. Louis, Missouri, in Mongolia, on the plateau, on the Mongolian plateau. That's something that I hope that people who are involved in the same struggle that I am will someday figure out. Because you know what? We have got to link up hands. I've got to be able to hold the hand of a Mongolian. I've got to be able to, in the other hand, reach out and grasp the hand of one of my human brothers and sisters in India, who are having the same damned thing done to them. And it's being done all over the planet. And every time you see this stuff happening, the perpetrators, Mark, are the gold people.
Well, why do you think Richard Gere is demonified? Because the Buddhists, getting back to religion from the Eastern culture, which you're an educated person, which is what is at its heart is probably peace and harmony, and as the uninterruption of territory and geography, which leads to the tremendous spike in cancer rates, you know, with the amount of mercury that's in the air, which comes from those Peabody coal mines. You know, when the beautiful Margaret Thatcher, who looked like Frankenstein, invaded the Falkland Islands, which the Argentinians call the Malvinas, she broke the coal miners' workers in England.
Yes, she did.
I think they import their coal now. Just like that, I was listening to you. I didn't realize. I knew we were shipping coal out of the United States to other countries. But, you know, those two brothers from India, I've not checked in to your subject and definitely not questioning your integrity, though not a blind leader, a follower. But I definitely trust what we're saying to each other. They are going to make their money in what Bob Kincaid said, the emerging markets, to include not only their own India, but also China. This is what the Project for New American Century, the Biganu Brzezinski, is basically saying. Whoever controls the resources of Southwest Asia will control the emerging global market. So what, it's too bad that fucking Republicans aren't smart enough to fucking know any of this shit, but, they call themselves Republicans, but they hate Abraham Lincoln, who was actually a Southerner
by birth. Yes. Well, he and Jefferson Davis were actually born less than 50 miles apart in Kentucky.
You can't be bad people from bad areas. It's funny that. And they actually kind of resemble each other a little bit in some pictures, but I can understand.
Yeah, especially before Lincoln grew the beard. Well, Mark, before we do wrap up, I want to you sent me down the garden path. I've got to learn more about David Shoup, but I found this quote from him, and I think we should probably share it before we break off this evening, because if he worked with Smedley Butler, then you can tell he must have had an impact. Listen to this. This is from David Shoup, former commandant of the Marine Corps, shortly after retiring and stepping down. He said, "I believe if we had and would keep our dirty, bloody, dollar crooked fingers out of the business of these nations so full of depressed, exploited people, they will arrive at a solution of their own that they design and want, that they fight and work for, and not the American style, which they don't want. No, not one crammed down their throats by the Americans." You know, we're fond of quoting our military leaders, but I've never heard that quoted before. Maybe others have, but I haven't, and I thank you very much, Mark, for bringing it to my attention.
Smedley Butler, David M. Shoup, and that's Vietnam, and that is Tunisia, and that is Libya, and from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, Thomas Jefferson had the Koran, and that went to the Barbary pirates, and Presley O'Bannon, but not trying to run from our history, but take a look at the CIA's involvement with Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala, 1953,
yep.
54, and Ernesto Che Guevara, one of those evil medical doctors who thought that poor people like much of West Virginia has were very important people.
Yeah, worth saving.
Our brothers, I look forward to the day I shake your hand and give you a big bear hug.
I do too, Mark. You take care, my friend.
My brother, man.
Bye now.
Bye.
And that is Mark. And we had a little more time for the conversation this time, and that's very nice. One last call to wrap things up. No. Maybe we won't have one last call to wrap things up. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Matt.
Hey, Matt. What's up, brother?
I just called to let you know that I have some video coming up on Western Alabama tomorrow. I was in the Alabama State House today in the gallery this afternoon as they passed a bill to require secret ballots for union elections. We had talked about this last week.
Uh-huh.
And your listeners probably remember I'm doing this little Goat Hill project. I was able to get video of the debate as well as a couple of interviews. The guy who was pushing this bill, Mr. Kurt Wallace, was unable to articulate a reason for this bill. Every time a Democrat got up and asked him a tough question, he simply responded that it was a, quote, common sense. It was a good common sense bill. That's all he had to say, even though he had the majority leader at his ear the entire time. The bill did pass. The Republicans had exactly 63 votes that they needed to pass it. But it is pretty, pretty lame. The debate was pretty amazing.
Well, and it was an exercise in futility because Alabama law cannot preempt federal law, can it? Not where labor law is concerned.
No, and that point was actually made. The National Labor Relations Board came up in the debate. And, of course, one of the things about this bill is that the wording applies it to all kinds of voting, not just union voting, but in kind of a sly way of saying that it's more general than union voting. It requires a secret ballot for voting in any election in Alabama. Well, we already have that in Alabama. And this, too, was pointed out. This bill changes absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, one of the Democrats who got up and talked about her time in the union and expressed that there has never been an election in her experience that didn't have a secret ballot.
Right.
And, of course, you know what this is really about. But my point here is that this debate is pretty amazing. Democrats actually had a press conference this afternoon. In which they came out swinging. And I have to tell you, I'm really pleased by the way that Democrats have responded here in Alabama. It's starting to give me hope. I have never heard them talk about the middle and working class as much as I have heard them talk about it in the last 10 days.
Well, God Almighty, maybe there's hope after all. And, maybe tomorrow evening, Matt, if possible, we can expand on this a little bit. But yeah. You will have video up at leftinalabama.com tomorrow morning. Is that correct?
Yes, or you can just go to YouTube and search for Goat Hill Project.
Goat Hill Project. Good work. Good work. Because I think one of the things we need to expand upon is the fact that these efforts are not these Republican efforts, whether it be a piece of show garbage like this or what went on in Wisconsin or in Ohio, New Jersey, Maine, Florida, what have you, that these are concerted efforts. And even Alabama is part of that concerted effort. And the only hope we have is to expand our own concerted effort in opposition.
Yes. And Alabama, in fact, is one of the central points of the Republican effort. Karl Rove has had a campaign going on here for years. This has been a focus. Republicans wanted this state. They have come after it, and they won it. And this is actually where it starts.
Indeed. Well, thanks for the good work, Matt, and thanks for the patience in waiting to give us the update, and hopefully we'll talk a little more about this.
We will talk more.
All right. Take care, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, and Goat Hill Project on YouTube, as well as leftinalabama.com.